What we're talking about this morning is the whole question of faith. Carl led us in some great songs. I really appreciate his choice. And the question is, and on the screen over here, we have the outline of the lesson. It's also in your bulletin. 40% of all Americans, when asked, what is their faith? Say none. That's pretty incredible. And by the way, that's a Gallup poll. That's not some other writing. 40%. Christianity is a minority religion. I mean, in the broadest sense of the word, in America today. There was an article in the Christian Herald by Wayne Turner, who's the editor of that publication. That's a Canadian publication. The title of the article was, Do Churches Produce Atheists? I think there's a lot of truth in the fact that churches do produce atheists. And I think one of the things that we have to get into here is, why do people have doubts? Why are there so many people that say none? And what have churches done about it? Sometimes we do more by inactivity than we do by verbally what we say. But for one thing, churches have not dealt with the question of faith. Why do we believe? You think about your own background. How many times did you have somebody teach you how we know there's a God? How do we know the Bible is God's word? I mean, some of you may be feeling that you're getting an overdose here between the Cooper series and between Sunday nights. But brothers and sisters, it is so critical that we start giving people evidence that there is a God. Anybody else not have the bulletin, by the way? Carl will get them to you. The lesson is outlined there, but it's also going to be on the screen. But for those of you on Zoom, it will be in the bulletin when you get it. People ask a lot of questions. Some of you know I have a website called Does God Exist, which has been on the web longer than I guess about any other site out there. And I get about 200 emails a day, average. And a percentage of those are people asking questions that they don't get answered at church. And some of them are really basic stuff. Another problem is that people have got doubts because they see hypocrisy in religion. Oh boy, is that a big one. I mean, every day you can pick up the paper and read some religious con artist that has ripped people off. But even those of us who try not to be criminals don't always set the example we should. Scares me to death that people will see weaknesses in me. I have to tell you, one of the things atheists tried to do to me was to get me into a compromise situation. Because I was traveling every weekend, leaving my wife at home. And I had cases where they would send a woman to my motel room to try and get me involved in something. I had challenges that I could spend a whole hour telling you about. Hypocrisy is a major struggle. And we just haven't seen people committed. You know, it's kind of interesting to me, when you look at the missionaries of the church and who they are, a vast percentage of them are people who did not grow up in the church. There are people who, like myself, came to the church later in life, who didn't have a family who believed. And part of that is because even in the church, we have not seen the importance of faith. When Cindy and I got married, I think it astounded a lot of people. I know it did her kids. Her one son said, "Mom, what's the hurry?" My response was, "I'm an old man. I don't have much time." But Cindy and I got married because we shared faith. I didn't know much about her. I could write a book about her now. And she certainly didn't know much about me. There's a lot of stuff I didn't know about me. But I think it's important to understand we've had a good marriage. Do we argue? Yeah. Do we disagree? Yeah. But we share faith. And that faith has sustained us. And both of us have had a rough go of it in the past. Both of us have seen mates die. Both of us have seen struggles with weaknesses that we didn't realize were there. But faith is so critical to marriage. Somebody gets married just for sex, the chances are that marriage is not going to last. Marriage is far more than that, and sharing faith is so common. I think one of the weaknesses of the church has been the fact that we have not encouraged our young people to marry a Christian. And the result is they marry someone who's not a Christian, and then they're in for all kinds of struggles. God's plan for marriage works. What kind of faith do you have? I want you to think about that for a few minutes this morning. Do you, for example, have an inherited faith? Are you a Christian because you were raised in a Christian home? That's great, but is that the only basis of your faith? I've had teenagers say to me, "Yeah, I go to church. It's a small price to pay for peace at home." And you know what happens when that kid gets to college? They never again darken the door of the church. I worked at Indiana University when I was a student there. One of the things that happens is that you fill out an application form when you enter the university and you indicate your religious faith. We had, if my memory serves me correctly, 400 and some odd young people that put Church of Christ on their registration form. Out of those 400 and some odd, how many were in church services? The answer is there were fewer than 100. Total. Actually, at the North Central Church, which was the campus church there, there were only 12. What about the rest of those? An inherited faith. For them, it is acceptance, not faith. Going to church is like paying taxes. You go because you have to. And that all that does is promote the status quo. If you have an inherited faith, if that's all you have, that's sad. You need to go beyond that. You need to be a Christian, not because mom and dad dragged you forcibly to church three times a week. There's another kind of faith that is not something that we should have, and that's what I call a blind faith. Blind faith is when you are a Christian because of emotionalism. You were stampeded into a response. I have to confess to you, when I first started preaching, I would try to give real emotional invitations. Oh, yeah, I could put it on. I had people in tears. And many times there would be a number of people that would come forward. But how much did that really change their lives? One of the problems that we have, I think, is that preachers have dealt their worth, and maybe churches have evaluated their worth by how many baptisms they produce. In the Gospel Advocate, there used to be a column where preachers said, I baptized 26 people last week. Oh boy, that's a good preacher. And my question would be, well, how many of those folks ever came to services? Bob Dankelson in South Bend one time would go door to door and reach people with the gospel of Christ and baptize them into Christ. But getting them to come to church was almost impossible. Billy Graham had a procedure. I have a young lady that wrote me about this one. He paid his organization, paid people to respond to his invitation. Why? Because when people started coming forward, other people would come forward. One of the problems we've always had at Christian camps has been the fact that many times we would have young people who would come forward because it was the thing to do at camp. It's a blind faith. And the problem with that is, what happens if that's all the faith you have and things get rough? And things do get rough. Look at David in Psalms 10. Why, O Lord, do you stand afar off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Have you ever yelled at God, God, where are you? Where are you, God? Times of trouble. In Psalms 13, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, O Lord my God. Those of you on Zoom, I read that to you because is that something that's been a part of your emotions? It has mine. It has mine. I've yelled at God. I'm not proud of that. But that's because of ignorance, and that's because of instability. See, I believe God calls us to an evidential faith. An evidential faith is a faith based on evidence. People say, no, you don't have to have evidence, you just believe. Well, that's a blind faith. That's an inherited faith. I've had preachers yell at me because they say, well, you don't have to have evidence. Well, how did Jesus deal with it? In Romans, the first chapter, starting with verse 20, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, and divine nature have been clearly been seen, being understood from the preacher on Sunday morning. No, that's not what it says. It's because mom and dad believe. No, that's not what it says. Have clearly been seen, being understood from what has been made. So men are without excuse. On Sunday night, we're talking about evidence. We've dealt with design. We've dealt with creation. We've dealt with the nature of God. We've looked at some of the modern arguments that show there is a God. Our website, dandydesigns.org, has example after example after example. Our DVDs have whole segments based upon evidence. Because we can know there is a God through the things he has made. God has given us evidence. The psalmist knew that. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows us the work of his hands. Have you gone outside and looked? Just looked? You say it's too cold. Go on your website and go to the NASA.gov website. Boy, the one this morning was just great. Look at the evidence. Psalms 139, verse 14. I will praise you, Lord, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Say, oh yeah, but my back hurts. Yeah, so does mine. Oh yeah, but I got indigestion. Yeah. Oh yeah, but I don't see so good. The fact that you see it all is a marvelous testimony to the wisdom of God. And God calls us to answer faith challenges. 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, be ready to give an answer to anyone who asks you of the reason for your belief. We are commanded to give a reason for our faith. It goes on and says, but do this with gentleness. This isn't a club that you beat people over the head with, but with gentleness and respect. In Acts the 17th chapter, when Paul was dealing with a group of highbrows, people who were Epicureans and Stoics, philosophers, and he referred to what they followed inadvertently as the unknown God. And what did he say? Did he say, well, you Epicureans and Stoics, you're just going to have to believe. No. No, what he said was, I'm talking about a God in whom we live and move and have our being. He told them they were worshiping an unknown God. And he saw the evidence of it all around him. In America today, the unknown God is that out there. It's that camper that just went by. It's that boat. It's that fancy car. It's materialism. It doesn't work. It never will work. It never has worked. God calls us to answer faith challenges. Brothers and sisters, you got kids, you got grandkids. You need to make sure they know what the evidence is. We have the tools for you to use. God has never called man to blind faith. And even in the stress of struggles with health, with family, faith is a critical part of what has taken place. In Mark, the 9th chapter, you remember the story about the father that had the son. He had epileptic symptoms. He would throw himself into the fire and awful stuff. And Jesus said to him, well, if you believe, I can help your son. And that father says at that point, I believe, God, help my unbelief. See, we never should minimize the importance of understanding faith. One of the great stories of faith, we've already made reference to it in class this morning, and it was referenced in our communion service today, is Thomas. In Thomas, in John 11 and verse 16, is the pillar of strength. When Jesus says he's going to a dangerous place, it's Thomas who stands up and says, let's go get killed with him. We don't normally think of Thomas as the leader, do we? I guess we focus on people's weaknesses rather than their strengths. But then we remember in chapter 20 that when Thomas was not there, and his statement was, "I just can't believe." And we talked in class this morning about how much of a struggle that had to be. But then the victory in verses 27 through 29 of John 11. And what did Jesus do with Thomas? Did Jesus say, "Thomas, you stupid jerk, what's the matter with you? Look at all the stuff we did. You saw Lazarus come out of that grave." No, that's not what Jesus did. He didn't insult Thomas. He didn't berate Thomas. He didn't condemn Thomas. What did he do? "Look at my hands. Evidence. Thrust your hand into my side. Evidence." And I was pleased to hear the quote in the communion, "How much more blessed are those that don't have to see but yet believe." Yeah. God calls us to answer faith challenges. But God has never called us to blind faith. And one of the most interesting passages in the Bible to me is Proverbs 8, starting with verse 11. I'm sorry, with verse 1, going through to verse 11. It's wisdom talking. And wisdom calls out to man. It says, it's interesting to me that wisdom is female in that verse. Sometimes the greatest wisdom around us is what we hear our women say and what they teach us. And what did Jesus do in Matthew 6? "Consider the lilies. Look at the birds." How much time do you spend just looking at the marvelous creation around us? Focusing on the power and the strength and the beauty and the design that allows us to live in a beautiful world. And what a contrast to the stupidity of humans. Romans 1, we talked about a minute ago, dealing with not only men who suppress the truth, but exchange the truth of God for a lie. And notice this, "and worship and served created things rather than the Creator." What do we worship? What do we understand? God has never called man to blind faith. Let me encourage you to read Proverbs 8, the first 11 verses, and 22 through 31. That's an astounding passage. But let me also say to you that the plan of salvation is not an inherited thing. It's not an emotional thing. My wife Phyllis talked about her first baptism, age 11. The preacher came to her and said, "Well, Phyllis, your mother's a Christian. Your dad was a Christian. You're 11 years old. Isn't it about time you were baptized?" "Okay." We'd been married a couple of years until she realized that her faith wasn't the kind of faith that Romans 6 talks about. One that changes your life. You cannot inherit obedience. And in Acts 2 and in verse 20, or verse 40, notice the statement, "Save yourselves." Your relationship to God is personal. That's you and God. Peter said, "Save yourselves from this crooked generation." You want peace, you want satisfaction, you want the kind of life that gives you strength and courage and ability to handle things that come. Don't rely upon men, rely upon God. When Paul talked to the religious leader, he had been talking about response to the invitation of Christ. And the response was, almost you persuade me to be a Christian. We got a lot of people today that are almost persuaded, but they never do it. Salvation is a personal thing. It's between you and God. Joshua, the 24th chapter and verse 15, the old prophet says, choose you this day whom you will serve. But as for me, I will serve God and Jesus Christ. What's the basis of your faith? Do you have an inherited faith? If you do, let me encourage you to invest time and energy in knowing why you believe what you believe. That's why we have this class on Sunday night. That's the importance of you coming and being a part of it. Were you stampeded into something you didn't understand? Was emotionalism what your basis was? Don't let that be what drives you. Study God's Word. Have your own faith. We extend an invitation every Sunday. We do that for a couple of reasons. One reason is to enable us to pray for each other and know the needs that people have. Another is to assist people who want to change their situation. And if you are subject to the invitation, we encourage you to respond to that. As together we stand and sing, won't you please come?